Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Well, dude, it's the Dudes on Hockey Trade-tacular. The Dude-tacular.
Dude Trade-tacular.
I think we expected today, Wednesday, trade deadline day, to be uneventful for the San Jose Sharks, and it was anything but, dude.
Anything but.
Anything but.
And it was boring in the morning, and then it got really interesting right near the end, so we're going to be talking about all those things. For trade deadline day, but one of the reasons we thought trade deadline day would be so boring is, in fact, the Sharks' biggest trade happened yesterday, which is what a lot of people were expecting. Ryan Clough didn't even play on Monday. He was scratched late. A lot of people thought the trade would happen that night. It actually happened yesterday, and so Ryan Clough has been traded to the New York Rangers for two draft picks. So
for three.
Oh, three draft picks, excuse me.
Yeah.
That's right. I was mistaking that with the Murray trade. So what, 2 second rounds?
It's a second, a third, and a conditional second.
Right.
That I think if the Rangers don't win two playoff rounds or they don't re-sign Clough, then that becomes a fifth. So let's just say that's not going to happen. So, I mean, although, you know, with the Gaberick trade today, that's more likely that maybe Clough is going to stay, or at least they have the room to keep him. So, I don't know. Let's say best case scenario, 2 seconds and a third.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy with that return for Ryan Clough when we were initially throwing around names like Couturier?
If you look at it through that prism, it doesn't look that great. But I think Mark Purdy said something really important today on Twitter during the Twitter storm of trade deadline day, where someone asked how come it seemed like Murray got so much more than Clough did. And the answer is because Clough had a no trade clause. So Clough got to sort of decide where he was going, which gave the Sharks less latitude in dictating what terms came the other way. I'm not saying the Flyers are offering Couturier. I have no idea. I doubt it. And some of the other stuff I read on the fourth period, for instance, said that Couturier was not in play for Clough. But the fact is, if Clough said, I want to go to New York, then Doug Wilson sort of says, okay, well, I guess I got to sort of make this happen the best I can. And there's less ability for him to fleece other teams.
We saw this earlier in the week with the Iginla, right?
Yes.
I mean, these guys, this is a huge advertisement for players not getting no trade clauses. All right, right?
I mean,
what Clough and Iginla did this week has probably had an impact on contracts coming up, not including these trade clauses. So especially Iginla completely bent Jay Feaster deliverance style over and showed him a pretty mouth.
Yeah.
Because they got nothing for him. Nothing. A first, really. And then two throwaway college players who are not even in, you know, really the prospect radar of the Penguins. I mean, Penguins gave up more for Brennan Morrow.
Yes.
Really. I mean, when they gave up the defenseman Morrow.
Right.
Who's, you know, a legitimate NHL prospect. So Clough, you know, probably impacted the Sharks' return. I think you're right. But that having been said, to get 2 seconds and a third for a guy who you didn't really need, honestly, right? I mean, what was he contributing other than the intangibles, okay? Popular in the locker room.
Check.
Check. Yes, yeah. You're saying check.
Yeah.
Physical presence.
Check.
Bodyguard.
Check. Interesting name with extra E's at the end. Check.
But other than that, you know, this is back-to-back disappointing seasons from Ryan Clough.
Mm-hmm.
Back-to-back. Yeah. And we can't forget that last year was a disappointment, too.
That's right. 45 points, I think.
For a guy who was in the high 50s.
He was in the 60s the year before.
You're expecting him to be a real scoring threat, and that has just evaporated, really.
Mm-hmm.
Not that he wasn't getting chances. He was. He just wasn't converting and not really, you know, being robbed of things. It just seemed like every shot just went right into the chest. You know, I mean, just wasn't really working out for him. I wish him the best, especially since I have the Rangers in the playoff pool. I hope that he does extremely well and that they win. They go all the way to the cup and the Sharks play him there. But it's in the end, it's a good deal for a player that you weren't going to keep.
It's a player that they weren't going to keep. And that's the key, right? So I think that if there were negotiations to keep Ryan Clough signed to an extension, obviously the Sharks had that ability to do since the very beginning of the season. They could have started that process with Ryan Clough last summer. I think probably what they did wisely is they did a wait-and-see approach. Let's see how he produces. And how has he produced? He has fewer points than Rafi Torres, who we'll get to in a minute.
Right.
So clearly the Sharks are saying, okay, maybe it could have been a situation where we're not re-signing you at any price. Or it could have been a situation where that said, we'll re-sign you, but for limited years and at very limited dollars. He was making over $3.5 million, and maybe they wanted to cut his salary in half or more, for all we know, if that offer was even on the table. So, and Ryan Clough says, you know, no, I'm not going to take that. So, you know, this sort of thing happens. I mean, for a guy who's going to be, who, like I said, had management's hands essentially bound to the teams that he wanted, or maybe the only team that he wanted in the case of Iginla, and was not going to be re-signed, I think three relatively high draft picks is not bad.
Yeah.
I will take it.
In the end, it ends up being 2 seconds and Rafi Torres for Ryan Clough. That's what it ends up being.
Right.
And I think that's pretty darn good return.
Yeah.
You know? I would have been more disappointed if the Sharks kept Clough and then gave him 4 years, $15
million. Oh, yeah.
Like, that's bad. If so, let someone else make that bad decision.
Right.
You know, this player is on the decline, and he could he turn it around? Absolutely. He could definitely turn it around in a change of scenery. But, you know, Ryan Clough seems to have been struck by a case of the chi-chus.
Yes.
Right now.
That's true.
And I think the coaching staff and Doug Wilson's fully aware of it, and they got rid of him. They got something in return. So, and they cleared some cap space to keep some players around that they need to address, like a Matt Irwin, who's going to be unrestricted next year.
Mm-hmm.
And don't think his agent doesn't know it, you know?
No doubt.
Matt Irwin could go on the open market and do decently, you know? No one's going to go Jeff Finger here, but
no.
It's a similar situation. Jeff Finger was nobody until he had a good year for Colorado, 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned that into a gold mine.
Yes. With in the minors.
With
the Toronto Marlies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the checks still cash when you're riding a bus.
That's true.
You know, he can thank Alzheimer's Fletcher for giving him that contract, dude. Anyways.
Yeah, there's no animosity towards Ryan Clough. We wish him the best. It was certainly not maybe as painful for us as it was for him to see him not score. But obviously, it didn't make anybody around here happy when he wasn't producing the way that everyone thought he should. And we certainly wish him to do better in the New York Rangers organization. They want to get better. They have John Tortorella. They want to get tough. And Ryan Clough makes sense. But if you're looking down the barrel of not re-signing a guy at all to fill a role that, frankly, he's not a top six forward anymore with this kind of production, is that really what you want? Clearly, the Sharks said no, and they managed to get something for him.
This team, while they're in the playoff picture right now, and I think the way that they're playing, and while we're going to focus on the trades right now, I think don't think it's lost on us. The Sharks won 5 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all happened since the Murray trade. They look extremely motivated. And you know, I think we both think it could go either way from here. They could take the foot off the gas tonight and get hammered by a Minnesota team that has their owner again throwing their full support at them by trading, you know, their goalie prospect. I mean, they're trading Matt Hackett. So they're really leaning on Josh Harding, we know has severe medical problems.
Yes.
You know, they traded one of their top forward prospects. They traded a first and a second for Jason Pominville,
mm-hmm.
who is signed for another year. But
right.
That's quite an investment. You know, for a very good player in Jason Pominville, but a big investment for Minnesota to win now, you know, to win now.
Or next year, at least.
So, you know, Minnesota's going to be pumped up tonight, I think. They're going to be fired up. So, which way the Sharks will go, I don't know. The other thing I want to talk about with Clough is, you know, we know he had some choices. It came down, apparently, to Vancouver or the Rangers. And I told you yesterday, I said, if he goes to Vancouver, I'm going to be upset. I almost didn't care if the offer was, I think I used the hypothetical, if the Rangers are offering a first and Vancouver is offering a second, other way around.
Yeah.
Vancouver's offering a first, Rangers offering a second, I'd rather take the second.
Right.
Because I didn't want to see Ryan Clough. I didn't want to see him succeed in Vancouver.
Well, given his production this year, you'd almost want to see him in Vancouver.
Yeah.
Because he's not really scoring a whole heck of a lot here, in all honesty.
Yeah. Oh.
So it may be sort of an addition by subtraction type of thing, which is what some people are claiming with Murray. I'm not as convinced that the Sharks are a better team because Murray got traded. Well, in the most literal way that sounds, which is the Sharks, now that they don't have Murray on the roster, are better. I think it's more what you are alluding to, which is some of the Sharks are scared about being traded, and now they have a little bit of extra urgency before the trade deadline, and it's very possible, given how the Sharks have taken days and games and even weeks off, seemingly, this season, for them to breathe a sigh of relief now that they're still here. They're not getting shipped, and they can sort of coast out the rest of the season here. We might see a Sharks dip. Hopefully not against Calgary on Friday, but certainly tonight against Minnesota, we may see a bit of a letdown. I can see, and we're not going to have Rafi Torres in the lineup. And the other trade we made today, what is old is now new again. Scott Hannon back in teal.
That's right. So the Sharks get rid of Klo, and almost in an afterthought, they get a fourth rounder from Michael Hontzis, which is like a freaking miracle.
I
can't believe that they got a fourth for Hontzis when today Steve Sullivan fetched a seventh.
That's true.
And Blake Como fetched a fifth. Like, I would have thought both those players would be considered to be more useful than Michael Hontzis.
Hats off to Doug Wilson for that.
Good luck at Chicago. I know they're saying, we need someone who can win some face-offs and an experienced veteran big body. We'll see if you say that in a week, meet.
Yeah.
All right. This guy looked washed up. Back-to-back years bad. So enjoy. I hope he ruins it for Chicago.
Yes.
Just ruins it.
Right.
It will be funny if he's not playing in 2 weeks. And they bring the kid back. They bring Bolig back up, who they sent down, and they're like, "Oh, oops, sorry.
Did I do that?
Do over?
Yeah,
do over."
So yeah, Hontzis, it already flown from my mind. I'd already forgotten
because so much happened today. Really, dude. We'll start with Scott Hannon.
Yes.
All right. The Sharks had two needs, really. They lost two roster players, guys who were playing regular shifts from the team, Douglas Murray and Ryan Clough. Hontzis was being scratched, so they didn't need to replace him. They got plenty of guys they can bring up and scratch.
Yeah.
Hello, Matt Pelich.
Yeah.
But, losing Douglas Murray, replacing him with Demers, if Burns is going to play up front, you don't have a seventh defenseman unless you're going to play Matt Tennyson, who I think we both agree is not ready to play in the NHL.
It's impossible to know if he's ready to play in the NHL. He's played exactly one NHL game. And the fact is, he was on the ice for both goals against.
Right.
So, that's not... You look at Matt Tennyson's history, he's described as an offensive defenseman. He was a very good player in college. He was having a very good year in Worcester, but he's been a minus player his entire career. So I guess the question is, do you want to bring up an offensive defenseman, a brand new green rookie, to play on the third line and give up goals? That's essentially what you're talking about. And I don't think that's exactly where the Sharks are right now. If they're in the 12th spot in the West and they're the Avalanche or they're Calgary and they basically have no chance of making the playoffs, then you say, yeah, I'll bring up the rookie, throw him in there, get him some power play time, pair him with whoever, pair him with everybody on the team, pair him with Thomas Greiss and see what happens and see if we can give this kid some seasoning. And then he has a real chance to be a steady contributor next year. But that's not what the Sharks are right now.
No, they're making a commitment to try and make the playoffs. And they did it without mortgaging anything, really. Yeah. You're giving up a sixth that if Hannon doesn't play in a playoff game, it's a seventh.
Mm-hmm.
And Scott Hannon, say what you want about Scott Hannon, okay? He has, his last two deals have been, for $1 million, maybe in his last three. And he was in Calgary, he went from Colorado, traded to Washington, did not play very well in Washington, went to Calgary, went to Nashville. But he still was playing regular shifts for the Nashville Predators before he got hurt. And
he played 78 games for the Calgary Flames last year. So this is a guy, you know, one of the ways I was thinking about it is, you know, this is a guy that is signing money that is easy to bury in the minors and easy to scratch a guy. You're paying a guy $4 million. You scratch him. It, you know, it's headlines, right? Hey, look, they're scratch, you know, Kreider's back to the minors, right? That's a headline in the NHL. But you got a 32-year-old defenseman in Scott Hannon, and you scratch him, no one's going to care. He played 78 games for the Flames last year. He's playing every single game for these teams. So, you know, 2010-11, he played for Colorado and Washington. He played 80 games for them. He played 80 games for Colorado the year before, 80 games, 81 games the year before that. So this is a guy making scratch money who's playing every single night. He can't totally suck. Right? I look what the Sharks did. They signed Jim Vandermeer and Colin White. They both suck and they scratched him like crazy.
Yeah, there's a big difference here. At least now, we haven't seen Scott Hannon play night after night in a long time.
Since
so maybe
07.
Our opinion might change.
Yes.
When he gets on the ice, which there's a little bit of confusion about that. You know, there were reports out of Nashville that he's been healthy to play since the end of March. He has not been activated off IR. And now there's some reports coming out of San Jose that he still is not going to be healthy enough to play for the next couple days.
Right.
So it looks like we won't see Hannon immediately. But is Hannon going to play, dude? He's going to play, right?
I think he's going to play.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy whose peak production was 24 points in the NHL. He had 12 points last year. This is not a guy you rely on the power play. This is a penalty kill guy,
right?
A defensive defenseman.
Block shots.
This is Douglas Murray, but more mobile is what this is, and doesn't hit as much. If you give up Douglas Murray, take some second round picks and get Scott Hannon, I say that's a good trade.
Yeah.
Right?
It's not exciting. I mean, it's not exciting, yeah. But I don't think we wanted something exciting. Exciting would have been trading Dan Boyle, which thank God that didn't happen.
Thank God.
You know, it did not happen unless this mystery trade to Washington is what we're waiting on. You know, there's this intrigue about this mystery trade to Washington that as we're recording, it has not been reported, but
even though we're over an hour after the deadline.
Yeah. Supposedly, you know, there's something major brewing in Washington. Wouldn't it be funny if it was Ovi?
No chance.
Oh, okay. Anyways, I wanted to start
but,
some
but Scott Hannon, I think, is going to play over Tennyson because the Sharks apparently are still trying to make a playoff spot. You know, there's a legitimate amount of money the franchise will make by selling playoff tickets. I should know. I just paid for my friggin' playoff tickets. So it's in the franchises want to make the playoffs. You know, they get a financial windfall from it.
Yeah.
So the Sharks aren't going to throw in the towel, and Doug Wilson has consistently said that they don't do that anyway. So they gain some depth guys, Scott Hannon being one of them. If Demers is out, I don't know if you want to put in Tennyson every night, especially if you want to play Burns up. So
some of the games that they have coming up, road trip to a Columbus team that is much improved and fighting for a playoff spot, going on the road to Detroit. These are not those kind of games that you want to have Matt Tennyson experimenting in.
Right.
Like, you don't even want Matt Tennyson out there tonight against Minnesota, unfortunately, unless they put Burns back at defense, which it doesn't look like they're going to. Tennyson's going to be out there again. You know, so not that he's a bad player. I don't, we can't even make that judgment right now, but he was not good against Vancouver. He was a minus two.
Yeah. Not good.
So not good.
You can't, I mean, it's one game. Again, it's one game, and you have to give a guy of that age and seasoning a lot of latitude, and maybe now isn't the time of the year to give him that kind of latitude.
So people really negative on Twitter about the Scott Hannon trade.
People really negative.
We hadn't seen negative until Doug Wilson, as the clock was striking 12 Pacific, rings in with Rafi Torres for a third round pick, the pick that we got for Klo.
Yes.
So now the evil empire, the Darth Vader of hockey, Rafi Torres, is headed to San Jose, dude.
Yes.
The outrage on Twitter was abundant.
Yes.
Dude, your opinion on this trade.
Love it. Love it. Did we say we wanted Rafi Torres last offseason?
Yes.
Didn't we say we wanted Rafi Torres the offseason before that?
Yes, we did.
I think we did.
And we took a lot of crap for that.
This is one of those guys that you hate him when he's on the other team and you love him when he's on your team. We've had players like this before, Sharks fans. Need I remind you of a very beloved former Shark who is now working for the Sharks organization in Brian Marchment.
Oh, everyone hated Brian Marchment, and he was a dirty player.
He was
and
a
we
dirty
knew it.
And we knew
and
it.
We wore a t-shirts with his name on the back. Dude, weren't we all excited about Claude Lemieux, maybe the poster child of villainry?
That's true. He practically had a waxed mustache that he was twirling as he skated around on the ice.
And he was severely muted, you know, in his old age in San Jose. But this guy was the dirtiest of the dirty.
This is a guy, I don't know if you ever watched Pros versus Joes. You ever watch that show?
Yes.
Where like regular people would compete in their sport against former pros. And they had an ice hockey one. It was the only ice hockey one they ever had, by the way. And they had this guy on skates against Claude Lemieux. Claude Lemieux high sticks the guy. Just some random guy on the show.
Yeah.
And Claude Lemieux high sticks him right there on the show. And the guy's like holding his mouth. Claude Lemieux skating away with the puck. It was great.
Awesome.
That's what we got. That's what we got. And actually, arguably, according to one of the people that follow the Coyotes, Rafi Torres might be a slightly different player now. Not all that dissimilar.
He's found Jesus.
Well,
Jesus.
Maybe. But he has fewer penalty minutes than Patrick Marleau.
He does.
He has more points than Ryan Kloh and fewer penalty minutes than Patrick Marleau now.
This guy is a pain in the ass. Whether he's cleaned up the penalty, I mean, you know, we know famously he's known for being suspended for that awful hit on Hossa in the playoffs last year. You know, he was suspended for 21 games. But in Phoenix, the last two seasons, he's played 107 games, 38 points, 96 penalty minutes, and the beat writer for the Phoenix Coyotes basically said, Sharks are getting a good player and a player that teams need to be competitive in the playoffs. You need an agitator. John Thornton, NHL agent, said, I would rather have, you know, I'd rather win than hate.
That's right.
So I think that sums it up. Every NHL person on Twitter said, good move. All the fans said, I hate you.
Right.
Villainry. You know what I mean? So,
which is a perfectly legitimate opinion to have, okay?
Absolutely.
But let's just be clear about what is driving that opinion. What's not driving that opinion is the careful look at Torres' ability on the ice, which actually might be better than the other third liners, of course, with the exception of Joe Pavelski, that we have right now. He has more points than Gagliardi. He has more points than Shepherd. This is a guy that can contribute on the third line right now.
He's a good hockey player.
He's a good hockey player. He's not just a guy. He's not Jean-Francois Jacques who went out there and beat people up and scored 2 points in 200 games. He can score. He can play.
Putting him with Pavelski and Gagliardi on the third line makes the team better. It makes the team better.
I can't dispute that. It's
and
true.
Don't we want to try and win, right? We want to try and win.
I hope so.
So this gives them a better shot than it did at 11:55 when we were playing Tim Kennedy on the third line when he got healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're bringing up Bracken Kearns. You know, this makes the team better. Team is better. And, you know, would you rather have Torres or Burrish?
Right now, I think you got to pick Rafi Torres over Adam Burrish.
Right now, yesterday, and tomorrow, you pick them. I mean, you look at the track record of the player, you know? Torres may be a total dildo, okay?
Yeah.
But the guy, he's been to the Cup Finals. He's been to the Western Conference Finals. This guy plays on teams that win.
And he plays when they're winning. He plays in the playoffs.
Yes.
He doesn't get scratched when they get to the playoffs. He plays.
So either you're listening to us right now and going, you guys suck and I hate you and you're wrong about this. Or you're saying, you guys suck, but you're right about this.
Yeah.
You know, there's no in between.
And believe me, I understand that there are some players that you hate so much, even if they could contribute to your team in some fashion, you would never accept them, Mike Ribeiro. Then I completely get that.
Yeah.
I completely get that. And if Rafi Torres is that person for you, then I understand. We're not going to change your mind. But for those who might be a little bit more open to suggestion, realize that the Sharks are probably a better team today than they were yesterday because of Rafi Torres.
I can't disagree with that. And I'm excited to see what he looks like in teal, dude. And the only thing I want to say to you, dude, and to the listeners is, do you like The Shawshank Redemption?
I love it.
Who's your favorite character in that movie?
You know, that really old guy with the bird?
No, not Brooks, dude.
Oh.
Think again.
How about one of the sisters, that guy who like got thrown off the balcony?
It's Morgan Freeman.
Oh, I forgot the script. Morgan Freeman, dude. I love Morgan Freeman.
And what was his character's name?
Red.
That's right. And doesn't he get redeemed?
He does get redeemed at the end.
Morgan Freeman, Rafi Torres, both red.
Both red.
Both getting a redemption.
Morgan Freeman killed a guy.
I know. I mean, Rafi Torres only tried to.
That's right. Didn't even succeed.
Just attempted murder. That's right. Not a big deal.
That's right.
I mean, what's the big deal? The Giants have a first base prospect that murdered somebody in Venezuela.
No way.
Yes, they do.
No way.
Oh, well, he got off. I'm sure the judicial system really thoroughly looked into it.
Ray Lewis.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, man, dude. Crazy.
An eventful day.
An eventful day. And I feel good about it. I think the Sharks have positioned themselves nicely to be active in the draft, whether it is using all of those picks or training them for players, packaging them with other players. I haven't changed my opinion on this team.
Right.
While they're playing better, I'm not under the delusion that they're going to win the Stanley Cup.
Right. And I know that there are some Sharks fans and other people out there on Twitter who think that the Sharks are good enough to make a deep run. I just can't see that happening unless, you know, major players on lots of teams get incredibly injured, although, you know, Sidney Crosby's out with a broken jaw, but you know, we're going to have to see three or four Western teams take a huge dive and the Sharks get monster hot in order for them to even have a dream of, you know, getting to the Western Conference Finals.
Tonight's a big challenge because, you know, the Sharks are going to finish somewhere fourth through eighth. And right now they're sixth. So if the season ended today, they played Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So how are they going to match up against Minnesota? The first time they played didn't look good. So, you know, tonight the Sharks are playing much better. Are they going to play like they've been playing the last five games where they've won and they'll dictate their tempo, their style on Minnesota tonight? Or are they going to fold? You know, that's going to tell us a lot.
Minnesota's a quick team. We saw that the last time they were played. We saw lots of Minnesota players seemingly go around Sharks players, and the speed was a killer. I don't think the Sharks scored in that game. You know, it's going to be a really interesting test to see what they can do, you know, if this new urgency that they found will remain after the trade deadline. You know, obviously, neither Torres nor Hannon will be in the lineup tonight, but God, I kind of wish we would have Torres in the lineup tonight, to be honest with you.
Dude, I'm going on Friday. Torres and, no, Hannon won't be, but I'll be there for Torres' debut.
Why not Hannon? Oh, because he's hurt. Yeah.
Stiff neck. He needs...
Ow, my neck.
I need a massage.
Might have been in a car accident with Mark Bell.
So, trades aside, dude, in these last five games, what has been the key to the turnaround of this team? Like, what's different? I mean, other than Murray being gone and lighting a fire, like, why are they winning all of a sudden? It's like they're not even the same team, really.
It's kind of hard to put my finger on, to be honest. They seem to be a little bit quicker and more urgent in transition. They seem to be a little bit more urgent on the forecheck to me. I wouldn't say that they're hitting a whole heck of a lot more, but you know, those are the two things that kind of go for what I'm looking at. I guess that maybe they're in front of the net a little bit more. I don't know. They're scoring 5-on-5. It's not just like a power play thing. So it's not just the power play is getting better. They're scoring some 5-on-5. You could say that they've changed the lineup enough. Putting Pavs on the third line has been pretty significant. If I had to point at one particular thing, that might be it. Line has suddenly been rejuvenated.
Yeah.
We saw the fourth line score on Monday night. We saw Desjardins and the surprise in both his and Burrish's faces after Desjardins scored was pretty funny to witness. Oh my God, what? You know, this kind of thing, which was funny. But yeah, they're getting more contributions from up and down the lineup. So I guess that's the thing. And they're not just relying solely on Joe Thornton anymore.
Moving Pavs to center was something that we speculated about before the season started, that was a possibility. It could happen. They shied away from it. We were worried about it from a happiness standpoint of the player, but the player sure looks pretty happy.
Yeah.
He's being way more productive in that role. Gagliardi has been rejuvenated, and you've got to assume that that's where Rafi Torres is going to play. He's not a guy you bring in to play 8 minutes. You know, you're going to bring in Rafi Torres to play a pretty regular shift during the game. And he's the type of guy that you would want out there still at the end of the game. I mean, you want him out there. Pretty responsible defensive player, good tenacity. You know, not someone the Sedins are going to be super stoked to see out there lining up against him with his fiery red beard, like some sort of angry Viking.
That's right.
So, red. Yeah. I see them walking down the beach. Ziwataneho. All right. Spoiler. Anyway, I should have said that afterwards. So, that's a big one. And you know what? Niemi all of a sudden has found the mojo again. Uh-huh. You know, not that he ever was bad, but he cooled off a little bit. And now he's on fire, dude. He's on fire. He's pitched a couple shutouts.
Yeah.
He's looked really good. And he's been awesome. And the puck movement has definitely improved since Murray's been gone.
Yep. Yeah, there's no way to get around that. That's true. And the PK has been actually totally irrelevant because the Sharks are now not taking penalties at all, it seems. What, they took one penalty the last 2-3 games? Something along those lines?
Yeah, dude. I mean, someone asked a question. We got an email, actually. We got two emails, dude. Do you want to take a look at those?
Yeah, let's do that.
No, we've been waiting on this mystery trade, dude, and I have some information.
You do?
You excited?
What do we have?
It is Martin Erat to the Washington Capitals.
Wow.
And we do not know what is going back in return, but okay. it's
Martin Erat
rumored to be Philip Forsberg. So we'll see.
Okay.
So,
Jason, do we want to go with Jason or do we want to talk about the penalty kill first?
Let's do the penalty kill.
Okay. Let's talk about that. That would be Chris from Boston. Do you remember that great 5-on-3 kill earlier in the season? We had all our best shot blockers out there, and they did a great job and killed it off. Do you think it's a problem if that two of those three players are now gone in Murray and Hanzus? Chris from Boston.
No, it's not a problem.
Okay, next question.
Well, I think you started talking about it. You know, penalty kill since Murray's been traded is a perfect 5-for-5. I don't think we've had to do a 5-on-3, but you know, I still will take the horses that we have.
Mm-hmm.
They're playing the system. I don't think that Murray was integral in it. Obviously, Hanzus, that was maybe the only thing he was good for, is blocking shots.
And shootout.
And the shootout. So the key, though, is the Sharks have not been taking penalties. They've taken, obviously, 5 minor penalties. I think 6, actually, because Close was late in overtime. It didn't actually result in a power play, but 6 penalties in the last 5 games. I mean, there's no coincidence that you're winning those games.
That's right.
You know, don't put yourself in a position to lose. And the Sharks have really figured that out. You know, as good as their PK's been, you don't want to gamble on that too many times.
That's right.
Now, if Rafi Torres coming, who knows? All bets are off.
That's right. All right, let's go to Jason. Would love to hear your takes on Dallas's moves this year. In my mind, the trades they've made are making those offseason signing of the league's senior citizens look like smart moves. They potentially turned a 1-year Jager signing into a first-round pick plus. They also seem less delusional than the Flames have been for the past few years. It takes some balls to make these moves when they're sitting on the bubble. Jason, put in this context, I think, you know, you're right, because you look back and you say they signed Ray Whitney and they signed Jaromir Jagr. What are these guys actually thinking? If they did it as part of a dastardly plan to trade those players away and get great picks in return, then my hat is off to them. However, I'm not going to give them that much credit because I don't think that was their plan. I think their plan was, okay, these guys are going to rejuvenate a team. We can make the 7 or 8 seed, and who knows what can happen when you make the playoffs. Anything can happen, even though usually higher seeds generally win the Stanley Cup. Okay. And the LA Kings are like the only team ever to do it as the 8. Okay, right. So that aside, so they signed a bunch of senior citizens to a team that wasn't that great anyway, and guess what? They weren't that great. And so now they managed to salvage what little they can from those guys. And yeah, they got some decent return from Jagr. And okay, I give them half credit, basically. They knew when to pull the plug on the team. I give Nieuwendyk some credit for knowing when to pull the plug and saying, yeah, this just ain't working out. Let's just ship these dudes and get out of here and get what we can. And they did that. Okay, yeah, they certainly get more credit than Calgary. I'll give you that much.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that they did pull the plug at the appropriate time. But I don't think that this team has a vision.
No.
I think their vision was distorted at the beginning of the year by trying to plug in these old guys and push themselves into legitimate playoff contention. I don't think they signed Yager to try and flip him for a pick.
No.
You know, I don't think that was the goal at all. So in the end, it worked out okay. And certainly, you know, not allowing Yager to have a no trade clause, you know, didn't put them in an againless situation where they might have only gotten a third back if Yager's only saying, you know, I will go to this team, you know. So it worked out fine, but I'd still be concerned about your Dallas Stars because I don't really see.
Oh, this is Jason. This isn't a Stars fan. I think Jason's just asking.
Oh, Jason. Then who cares about the Stars?
Yeah, no one cares.
This isn't our Stars fan.
Yeah, no, it's not.
Okay, well, he's probably still listening and I'd be concerned.
We do have a Flyers fan, though.
Yes.
He says he's wondering out loud here as a Flyers fan, is it possible that teams with top shelf talent such as the Sharks and Flyers are underachieving due to players who are let down by the results of the lockout? Seems the guys in the high end of the trade scale had the most to lose and some may feel too deflated to perform up to expectations. I don't want to start any conspiracies, but I am unable to make any sense of it otherwise. I don't think that's it. These guys, they just want to play hockey. I don't think they're deflated by the results of the lockout or not the results of the lockout. I think, if you had to pick where this thing was going to end up before the season and before the lockout started, you say players, owners get roughly 50-50 and everything else is, you know, negotiable. And that's more or less where we ended up. Of course, it took a lot longer than we would like for it to end up there. But I don't think that it really explains why the Sharks were in a terrible spot. The Sharks were in a terrible spot because nobody was playing very well and they looked slow and they got older. And it's just, you know, that overall malaise, I don't think, has necessarily gone away, although they're playing better now than they were, probably closer to where they ought to be. The Flyers, frankly, I don't quite understand. Although missing Chris Pronger and looks like Chris Pronger is basically done is a huge problem for the Flyers. And I know they went out and they tried to get Ryan Suter and they signed Shea Weber to an offer sheet, which the Predators matched, so they didn't even end up with that. But I mean, right now the Flyers have the same problem that the Flyers often have had, which is they got shoddy goaltending and they got a problem at D, but they do have some top shelf young players at forward. So, you know, I just think the Flyers came back down to earth a little bit without Pronger, and Brizgalov just isn't proving himself.
Yeah, I guess by this theory here, then Boston and Chicago and Pittsburgh, who are all big money teams with a lot of high price players, should all be doing bad. Like if Nashville and Columbus were the best teams and Florida were the best teams in the NHL, then I'd say maybe your theory is right because they're, you know, the little guys are rising above and the big money players are all pouting. But I don't know if I agree with this theory. I mean, maybe some individual guys might be underachieving. Yeah. You know, it seemed like Eric Cole was pretty pissy about the whole CBA.
Yeah.
And he's having a terrible year.
And he got traded.
And he got traded. Yeah. So, you know, not impossible that for an individual guy, you know, it could be impacting them. But overall, I don't think it has much to do with the team production. Dude, shall we go back and really quickly look at some of our favorite trades and some of the funniest trades?
Yeah, usually we do that. Let's look at some of these trades. Scrolling down here, dude.
What's the best trade of the day? What do you think is the trade, other than the ones that the Sharks did, which we're not allowed to consider, the trade that you think is going to help a team the most?
You know, what's actually kind of funny, and I think it might have been Evil Ducks or it might have been somebody else on Twitter that said this. Basically, the the Columbus Blue Jackets traded away a goalie for a better goalie in a third round pick. They traded Steve Mason to the Flyers for Michael Layton in a third round pick. So Steve Mason has been just flat out awful for a while now. And they got Michael Layton, who basically took the Flyers to the Cup Finals and a third round pick. So as far as best trade of the day, I might go with that one, frankly, because I don't understand why anybody would want Steve Mason, much less for a decent goalie and a pick.
Yeah. I don't know.
A goalie for a better goalie and a pick.
Yeah.
The new GM in Columbus is not looking so bad because they got Marian Gaborik, and that trade wasn't terrible either, although they gave up a King's Ransom to get him.
Well, they gave up Dorsett, who's a, you know, fourth liner. John Moore, who is a prospect defenseman, young guy who doesn't even seem to really register in their top 20 guys. And Brassard, who's a player who's had ample opportunity there to thrive and really hasn't. Mm-hmm. And a sixth. And in return, they're getting a guy in Marian Gaborik who can be a 40-goal scorer or he can be garbage.
Right.
So, and he's injury-prone. So I think actually that's, to me right now, that trade's kind of a wash. Because
mm-hmm.
the Rangers got rid of someone they didn't want. They got in Brassard, a player who could do quite well.
Yes.
In New York. Dorsett would fit in nicely there with Tortorella if he's able to come back this year. John Moore, I don't know enough about, and the sixth-round pick is a sixth-round pick. And Columbus is in a position where they have the cap space to take a gamble on this. And if it doesn't work out, then he's gone in a year. You know?
Yeah.
And if it does, then they look like geniuses. I think my favorite trade of the day... this is a tough one. I think my favorite trade of the day might be Ottawa getting Corey Conacher and a fourth for Ben Bishop, who essentially was their third goalie.
Yes. That's amazing.
I know Conacher's undersized, but the guy, all he did at the AHL was score. He got off to an amazing start this year. I know he cooled off a little bit, but going to a young team in Ottawa, you know, this could be a really good move for them because Ottawa, they didn't need Ben Bishop.
Nope.
No, Lerner is good, better than Bishop, and Craig Anderson, when he's healthy, he's going to be the number one. So you don't need Ben Bishop. So you turned around in a situation where someone could have taken advantage of you and said, "No, this is not a move that we're going to, you know, make it easy for you. I'm only going to give you the fourth."
Right.
But instead, they got the Lightning's fourth leading scorer.
I know.
You know,
there must be something they don't like about that guy. That's all I can think of.
He's small, you know, and I think he cooled off. But I think it wasn't that they didn't like Conacher. I think that they liked Ben Bishop. Everyone likes Ben Bishop.
Right.
But
until he starts playing.
I don't know if he's bad, dude. He hasn't had a bad year. It's just something game sample size.
Yeah.
This didn't exactly work out when they traded for Lindback.
No, it didn't.
So Tampa has traded their fourth leading scorer, a fourth and 2 seconds for two goalies that have no real NHL track record.
It's weird.
It is weird.
I guess Yzerman is obsessed with goalies right now.
I guess. I mean, I think he's taking shots in the dark. So I would say that's a win for Ottawa. I like that trade for Ottawa. Dude, is there another trade that you like?
Let's see here. Whoa. You all right, dude?
Yeah, I'm just...
Let's see what else.
Purging myself of the evil of Rafi Torres has been inside me.
St. Louis getting Bomeister was pretty funny to me. I thought that was pretty amusing. But, you know, I wouldn't say that was a terrible trade for really either end. Jay Bomeister seems has an outside contract, but St. Louis can take it on. And Calgary finally got rid of a guy that's been loading them down forever. So that's not necessarily a terrible trade for both players.
Yeah, I had forgot. I was focusing on the ones from today.
I thought the UC Jokinen trade was pretty funny, considering he was on waivers like 2 weeks ago.
The whole thing with that was about the money. I mean, Carolina kept some of that money, so Pittsburgh was willing to take him for part of the salary,
for
but
2
not
million
the whole
or
salary.
3.
But there's an extra year on that contract, so
I know.
I mean, that's not a really easy pill to swallow. The Pominville trade for Minnesota is an all-in move right now. For a team that has a lot of good prospects, it's maybe not a bad move, but certainly making a commitment to winning now. They gave up a lot, you know, they gave up a lot in that deal. What else? What else happened yesterday? Derek Roy to Vancouver for a second and a prospect?
Yeah, good prospect, apparently. A good defensive prospect. Yeah. So that's good return for Dallas. I mean, clearly Dallas decided that they didn't need this guy. Derek Roy's had some injury trouble, not as much as I sort of had in my mind. I sort of had this idea that Derek Roy was this guy who got hurt constantly, but really he had 1 year where he was pretty limited. But most years he's been out there, but his totals have come down. You know, he's in the 50s and 40s now, but you know, he's a decent player. So Vancouver, if they think they can still make it to the Cup and And right now, they look like one of the three or four best teams in the West. You know, that's not a bad trade for Vancouver right now. If they need some more offensive punch, I don't know what the deal is exactly with Ryan Kessler. I think he's still out. I don't know when he's coming back. And the question is, when he comes back, is he even going to be that effective? You know, if you get into the playoffs, the ice gets a lot smaller. Guys take a lot more bumps. And if you got a guy coming off an injury like Ryan Kessler, you know, is he really going to be as effective if he's going to be absorbing hits right and left when right. he's playing, you know, a team that's willing to dish it out in the first round, like L.A. or something, you know, as the five or wherever they are, because Minnesota's in the three right now. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily a bad deal for Vancouver. So
scroll back up, dude. Scroll back up. Let's okay. see. There was something else that I found to be amusing. Let's see. Which
Jared
one was
Smithson,
which
inherently amusing. Wade Redden, funny.
Wade Redden to Boston for a seventh. I mean, Steve Sullivan for a seventh. I'm surprised that...
that Phoenix let him go for so little. I mean...
Yeah, I mean that...
Steve Sullivan was a pretty damn good player.
Yeah,
once.
I mean, that was a giveaway, basically, a giveaway. Yeah, the Steve Mason trade is the funniest by far. I mean, that's that one. It's... Paul Holmgren is... highly illogical.
Ken Huskins for a conditional pick.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
That's
Philly gets Ken Huskins and Steve Mason. Oh, what a bountiful harvest.
I don't know how much longer you can let that guy run that team. I mean, I'm being serious. Like,
no,
I mean,
no.
He's made some really weird moves. He's locked up some players that I like Wayne Simmonds and Hartnell, but those guys have like 8-year contracts or something. They're just crazy in length. And, you know, he's defense is terrible. The goaltending situation is in shambles.
Yes.
You know, with Brizgalov, they're going to have to, I guess they got to buy him out. What a waste of money.
I think you have to. You have to buy up. What I would do if I were the Flyers, I would buy up Brizgalov, you know, and get him completely off the salary cap because you can do that. You have some amnesty. Use the amnesty on Brizgalov. Pay them the money. They got enough money. They're owned by Comcast, for God's sake. And then you go out and you spend that money and get a defenseman. They tried last offseason to try to get Shea Weber. Okay, put your hat in the ring. Try again. Get another guy. Who's going to be available? I don't have the free agents list in my head right now, but that's what you need. You need that bad. And then go sign Mathieu Garon. Go sign like a regular, like Michael Layton. Oh, wait, they just traded him. But go get him.
Dude, they've got Steve Mason. They've got Steve Mason.
Problem solved. But you get a middling goaltender and you get a good defenseman and they'll be better because they have good young players up front. You got to fix some of the defensive issues in that team or else they're going to continue to suck for a while. So anyway.
Well, dude.
Dude, it was a more eventful day than I thought and it was fun. And I'm glad the Sharks got, you know, one ex-Shark, which is always a little fun. I always had... You know, maybe I'm colored by my warm feeling towards Scott Hannon. I always liked Scott Hannon. I really did when he was on the Sharks.
I don't have an issue with Scott Hannon. It's been a long time since he's been in Teal, but he certainly brings back memories of some fun teams in the old Nolan, Mike Ricci, Scott Thornton era.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see what kind of impact he has. I think it will be very little. I think it'll be sort of the thing where you don't even really notice he's there, which is exactly what it should be like when you have Scott Hannon out there for 15 minutes a night. No, that's what we're talking about, 15 minutes a night. And you know, Rafi Torres, I think, is going to have a big impact. And I hope it's in a positive way.
Yeah.
But I think he's going to make an impact. And if the team can continue to play well, then when you get to the playoffs, if you get a good matchup, if the Sharks somehow draw Detroit, you know, if they could win a playoff series.
Yeah.
And then, you know, anything's possible when you dream. You dream of me. Okay.
That we're not going to win two series.
I know.
Let's be honest,
dude.
There's no way.
I just had to end with a song.
It is a good song. I wish we could play a song from Silence the Musical. But I think we'll have to sign off here. So, dude, I'm looking forward to the Minnesota game
because
this will indicate how the Sharks can deal with a real West Coast power.
Yeah, and, you know, the absence of Ryan Clough and knowing that they've got these two guys coming in, how is this locker room going to react to this? And are they going to keep the foot on the gas or are they going to take a detour to Half Moon Bay? We'll see.
See you then.
show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.